If you've ever lived with chronic pain, painkillers might seem like your only option for getting through each day. Yet someone dies from an opioid overdose every 20 minutes in the United States. That's 78 people dying every day. This hour, we hear stories from residents around the region about what it's like to live with pain, use opioids to manage that pain, or in many cases, try not to use them. If this resonates with you, we want to hear from you. First, we're joined by two medical doctors here to discuss how providers in Humboldt County are trying to develop safer practices for pain management and opioid use. From the RX Safe Humboldt Coalition, we have Dr. Mary Mings. Dr. Mings is the medical director of the Humboldt Independent Practice Association. Dr. Mings, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And Dr. Bill Hunter is the medical director at Open Door Community Health Clinic in Humboldt County. Dr. Hunter, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you.
All right. Thank you both for joining us. Dr. Mings, as we launch into this discussion, I'm hoping you could give us a better idea of how pain acts on the body and why opioid drugs are so widely prescribed to treat it.
Well, I'll take a stab at it. That's a big question or big topic. There's, you know, we like to think of this when we're talking about appropriate treatments as acute pain and chronic pain, and those are approached differently. I don't think we run a detailed discussion of neurotransmitters or deep physiology, nor am I prepared to do that. But, you know, opioid painkillers are an excellent treatment for acute pain. And chronic pain is different, especially if it has been treated with opiates. It the whole physiology changes, and the drug interacts with the body's ability to produce its own natural neurotransmitters and to regulate them. So using opiates for over long term is a completely different physiologic situation than short term.
And some examples of opioid drugs that people might be familiar with from their own experiences having surgery or conditions in their own medicine cabinets. Morphine comes to mind, hydrocodone. Could you name some others, Dr. Mings?
Oh, sure. Hydrocodone, which people know of as Vicodin or Lortab, you know, it's confusing when you have generics and brand names. Hydrocodone, which is OxyContin or Percocet, Dilaudid, probably the hydrocodone and the hydromorphine are the most commonly prescribed.
And Dr. Bill Hunter is also with us from Open Door Community Health Clinic in Humboldt County, where in the most recent year we have data for 2013, people died from opioid overdoses at a rate that's three times the state average, talking about 17 deaths that year alone. And in general, people are more likely to fatally OD from painkillers and heroin in rural parts of Oregon and California versus our urban counterparts. Dr. Hunter, and I know you don't have all of the answers, but from your experience working in a clinic and being with people every day on the ground, could you speak to some of the reasons why rural areas are more affected by this?
Well, it's certainly heartbreaking, and it's certainly something that our team has been looking at and trying to develop a response to and try to understand it better. My own perspective on it is that there may be several systematic reasons. It may at least partly be an artifact of demographics. I mean, I think if you look at rural, certainly Humboldt County, which is what I know the best, we're about 90% Caucasian. We have a very, very high rate of unemployment, of disability, of poverty, very high rate of cigarette smoking, and all those kinds of demographics correlate with high use of opiates as well. Another thing that we've been realizing lately is that in Humboldt County, and I'm not sure about rural Oregon, but certainly in Humboldt County, we have a disproportionately high number of people who had very traumatic childhoods, and somehow, in some cases, that seems to be kind of wrapped up in it as well. The thing that I'm not sure of, and I don't know how anybody would ever know, is whether the kind of underground drug culture that's sort of sustains our economy also plays in. I'm just not sure how to think about that part of it. I sort of wonder, and I've asked people at the state whether they could give us data. If we matched ages, ethnicity, income levels, rates of disability with our county and, I don't know, other counties, Marin County, for example, if you took the same demographic, do they have the same rates or do we have additional problems as well?
Interesting. And Dr. Mings, I want to circle back. You mentioned that the effects of using opioids in the short term are very, very different from the long-term physical effects. Could you lay the difference out for us? What actually happens to a body when you take hydrocodone for several years, as many people that we heard from about this segment have?
Okay, sure. I think of it as a sort of a stepwise from least impactful to most devastating. And so most people are familiar with tolerance. That just means with over time, you require a higher dose of opiates to accomplish the same level of effect. So people know about that and expect that. Then there's actual dependence or addiction, and I think people are familiar with that. But I think even worse than either one of those is something called hyperalgesia, and that means that for most people, after some period, which may not be all that long, of regular daily use of opiates, their pain threshold goes down, and their sensitivity to pain is actually much higher. So that not only does it take more to relieve them because of tolerance, but their pain is worse. And this is tragic. This is really sad.
Dr. Mings, we're going to pick this up on the other side of a break. Surprising me there that opioids actually do decrease your pain threshold. This is the Jefferson Exchange. We'll be back with the phone number and email address in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange, I'm Emily Curitan. Our guest today, Dr. Mary Mings, Medical Director of Humboldt Independent Practice Association, and Dr. Bill Hunter, Medical Director at Open Door Community Health Clinic in Humboldt. They're both members of the RX Safe Humboldt Coalition. We are going to be discussing the goals of that idea and how to make opioid use safer or not at all for some conditions in Humboldt County. You're welcome to join this discussion, 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. We actually reached out to people, residents across the region, in advance of the segment via an online survey asking if they'd ever taken or been prescribed an opioid drug. 36 responses came back in a short period of time, and 90% of them said they had obtained opioids through a prescription from a medical doctor at least one time, even if later on they turned to the black market. One of those people who took our survey is Chris in Medford. And this, again, Dr. Mings, will go to your point, I think, talking about the difference in building up a tolerance, becoming addicted, and then your actual pain threshold changing with opioid use. Chris in Medford says he's been taking them for 20 years due to acute episodes of lower back pain from spondylolisthesis and lumbar fusion that started when he was 13. He says hydrocodone helped him manage the pain for years, but its efficacy has lessened. In Chris's own words, "I dream of the things I used to do and the life I led before pain consumed me, yet the thought of discontinuing my prescriptions is a nightmare scenario. Without some other way to relieve my pain significantly, I'd rather not rock the boat. I take 2 hydrocodone tablets 3 times a day on average." Angela in Medford also weighed in. She says, "I'm unable to work and function without hydrocodone because the pain is unbearable." So, Dr. Hunter, what are some of the options available to someone like Chris or Angela who have been using these drugs for a long time and can't really imagine their day without them?
This is a very difficult situation that we face, we practicing clinicians face every single day. And it really is hard to figure out how to help people through. Because on the one hand, it's becoming clear to us more and more that there is a way in which these medications are perpetuating the problem. And the teasing part, the tantalizing part, the upsetting part is that people's experience is just like that. They take 1 or 2 of those Norco and their back feels better. They do it again later in the day. They do it again later in the day. And it is true, it feels better. And if they don't do it, then they hurt. But what nobody can know after doing this for years, what they can't know and what I can't know and what no commentator can know, is to what extent that pain, that rebound pain, is partly a function of withdrawing of the opiate, and whether if you were able to withdraw it and get totally opiate-free for a matter of, and it may take several weeks, it may take several months, but if you were able to do that, and some of our patients have done that, and at the end of all that, they tell us, and a lot of them do, that their pain is less and that they function better. Now, that's not a 100% thing. No recipe fits all patients. What we've been doing here at our clinic is that we try to work with people to help them understand that even though they do help you and does help you get through your day, and I totally believe all of that, that you may be paying a price. You may be paying a price in terms of depression. You may be paying a price in terms of cognitive ability. You may be paying a price in terms of loss of testosterone function, bone density, and then what Mary is talking about, inability of your own body to fight pain. You may be paying all those prices without knowing it. And there may be healthier ways and for you to go. And our job as clinicians is to try to work with individual people and try to work on, you know, get on a safer, healthier, more productive path. And some people do end up just staying on them. And as long as they're not, you know, selling or something like that, then we sometimes work that way. And then the other option that we've found to be very successful for some people, not everybody, but for quite a few people, is buprenorphine. Sometimes this brand name is known as Suboxone. For some people, that can be very helpful for pain, maybe more helpful for pain, and it doesn't have that kind of craving aspect to it that the other ones sometimes do.
And the other survey response I'm looking at here, of course, we're talking with two medical doctors here, part of a provider network, tasked with treating people's pain with compassion and also not over-prescribing opioids, but also not under-prescribing them, I would think. This comes from Kendra in Reading. She contributed through Facebook. She says, as a pharmacy tech for 14 years, I'm glad to have left the field. So many people hurt by opiates, and one local pill mill caused a huge downward spiral into what is now a heroin epidemic in our region. So many people hurt and so many lives lost. We need addiction services and mental health services desperately now, but local funding is slashed. I left the field a few years ago because I felt like I was an accessory to harming our community. So Dr. Mings, I'd love to hear your take on that. Have you ever felt like an accessory to harm by prescribing opioids or by not prescribing them?
Definitely. Most people who have studied this will say that that the pendulum has swung, or some phrase like that. And the truth is, about 30 years ago, OxyContin was approved by the FDA, and there was quite a lot of marketing from its manufacturer to both the public and to the medical community, and messaging to the medical community that, you know, it was wrong to undertreat pain and that we had a duty to assess pain and offer however much opiate medication it took to relieve a patient's pain. And the sort of devious messaging that went along with that was that this was safe and there was no downside to it. So most physicians, you know, were compliant and prescribed too many opiates. And so it's really the fault of the medical community that this was a well-intended but not a good way to help patients with their pain. So a lot of patients got dependent and they didn't get relief of their chronic pain. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. And of course, we're trying to gain some insight into the problem here before we turn to some of the solutions that you and Dr. Hunter are putting out there with this RX Safe Humboldt Coalition to kind of create a community framework, as I understand it, for re-educating providers that you know, prescribing painkillers or using them isn't as consequence-free as we once thought. Before we get there, though, we've got some calls on the line. I'd really like to put them on the air. I'd like to go to Chloe in Gold Hill. Chloe, you're on the air.
Hi. I was on oxycodone for about 10 years. Originally, was prescribed for degenerative disc disease and chronic pain in my back. And then I had cancer with multiple surgeries that really kind of messed up my whole physiology. And I knew that this crisis was coming where doctors would, you know, be very reluctant to prescribe it. So I decided on my own to wean myself off. It took me 2.5 months. I titrated down, which I'm very proud of. But the fact is that my doctor then offered me no alternative to help me manage the pain except over-the-counter medications, which have their own side effects. And now I just live with the chronic pain again. I rarely sleep through the night. It's difficult for me to function in my job. And so I'm just wondering how I would even approach my doctor about this.
All right. Thanks. Chloe, thank you for that. Dr. Hunter or Dr. Mings, would you like to take a swing at Chloe's conundrum there?
Sounds like she did a really heroic thing there in a way, and probably is healthier in some ways because of it. One of the things that we participate in is a Project Echo, it's called, where we meet with pain specialists from UC Davis and other places once a week and present cases. And cases like Chloe's are pretty common. Now, there are a number of the things that are shown to help that, other than opioids. The things that are shown scientifically to help that particular kind of thing are several. There are specific yoga positions and yoga practices that have been shown with good success. Mindfulness training in a very structured sort of way has been very helpful. Movement therapies and in-water therapies have been very helpful. So most of the treatments that actually work for low back pain with these people that have had operations and spondylolisthesis and degenerative disc disease and all these other very painful conditions, most of the things that actually help the pain are ways to loosen up the muscles and decrease the distance between the vertebrae, allowing the disc spaces and the nerves to breathe a little bit. There are medications that can be adjunctive and helpful. The tricyclic medications, which in the old days we used to think of only as antidepressants and very high doses, we're realizing now that they can help people sleep, help people with what's called this neuropathic pain. I maybe should get into a discussion of that before we're done. But anyway, that kind of pain that she has, that can be helpful. There are other adjunctive medications. Some of them are, you know, most of the medical treatments are aimed at working on nerve pain, and some of them have a lot in common with anti-seizure medications. So there's gabapentin, there's Lyrica, and then the other group that sometimes is helpful is various kinds of antidepressants, which, as well as working on mood, have an effect directly on the nerves that cause these chronic pain syndromes.
Dr. Hunter, I'd like to circle back. You mentioned yoga and mindfulness. First thing, let's go to Abby in Ashland on the line. Abby, you're on the air.
Hi, I am a yoga therapist and yoga instructor here in Ashland. And as you mentioned, there are a lot of yoga techniques, and especially mindfulness-based stress reduction has some great tools for helping people with chronic pain. And I'm curious to hear from the doctors, what would make it easier to refer more patients, or really how can we work together to connect the patients to some of these solutions?
That's a great question, Abby. Thank you. Dr. Mings, you want to take a swing?
Sure. Our coalition recognized that need. We had a belief in the value of a lot of non-pharmacologic therapies. So we worked for quite a while and developed a resource guide. And this is for Humboldt County, and there's a few neighboring providers. And we gathered as many providers of physical therapy, body work, massage, acupuncture, cognitive behavioral therapy, yoga, Pilates, et cetera. And we produced a guide. So this guide says who they are, where they are, do they take insurance, in particular, do they take Medi-Cal. We're hoping this is really helpful to both providers and individuals. It lives on our website, which we've been promoting as a way for people to get that information. And that website is rxsafehumboldt.org.
And I think Abby brought up something interesting there about getting providers and different people who are in positions to help those in pain to communicate and coordinate about different strategies. It also stuck with me. Our caller, Chloe, said that she got no advice from her doctor, but she knew she didn't want to take the pain meds anymore. So, you know, outside of your website and within Humboldt County, how are you able to really bring folks together and get them on the same page?
Well, we've been working on this now for a good 3 years. Again, as Dr. Hunter mentioned, this grew out of our recognition of our rather horrifying death rates and the problems that all the individual doctors were recognizing within their practice about how many of their patients were struggling. So we have large meetings. We have educational sessions. There are articles by email and on paper, and there's in-person visits to practices where we know they're really struggling. And we've produced prescribing guidelines. We're trying to look at this issue as both as opportunities for upstream intervention and downstream intervention. And on the upstream side is to help providers know how to better treat acute and chronic pain and not get new patients started on this dilemma of inappropriate opiate use. And that includes using these non-pharmacologic therapies and non-opiate medications.
If you're just... Can
I jump in a little bit here? I appreciate the yoga teacher and the several yoga teachers in Humboldt, too. My problem as a practicing physician is it's kind of a hard sell with my patients, and the barriers seem to be several. One thing they always talk about is cost, even though I'm sure people can take yoga classes that are really reasonable. My patients always bring that up. There's a whole other cultural thing that I really don't know how, at least I haven't found successful ways of combating, where people say, oh, I'm not that type. I don't want to do that yoga stuff. You're a hippie stuff, whatever. I mean, I practice my yoga routine every day, so I'm not quite sure how to get that across to people as well. One thing we're doing at the Open Door is that we have a session for the next 8 weeks, once a week, 2 hours once a week, and one day in the middle of it all day for our providers. We have 30 providers signed up, and we have an out-of-the-area mindfulness teacher coming. So we're going to train our providers in mindfulness training. We're really hoping we can get some groups going, but it's a little bit frustrating to me because it's kind of a big cultural shift, and when I suggest yoga, the reaction I get from my patients a lot is that, oh, you're telling me this is all in my head when really my back really actually does hurt. And that's a hard confirmation for me to have because I totally agree that their back totally hurts, and I totally believe that if they practice yoga every day, it wouldn't hurt quite as much, but it's hard for me to sell it.
If you're just joining us, we're hearing from Dr. Bill Hunter, Medical Director at Open Door Community Health Clinic in Humboldt County. Also on the line is Dr. Mary Mings, Medical Director of the Humboldt Independent Practice Association. They're both members of the RX Safe Humboldt Coalition, a community effort to create a safer way to deal with pain management and avoid opioid misuse. We surveyed a lot of folks across the region. I want to go to a comment from Daniel in California. Daniel says he broke his leg in 27 pieces in a construction accident, led to 21 surgeries and 3 years of limited mobility on crutches. In Daniel's words, my doc would give me Vicodin. I ate like candy. And when it didn't work, he put me on Darvocet and then Percocet. And yes, I started to abuse them. I took too many, or I took them with alcohol. It was a battle. But with the help of marijuana, I ended my opioid addiction. It took about 7 years total and my marriage before it was all over. So Daniel in California saying marijuana helped him out of a very dark place with opioid addiction. Where do you stand on pot to treat addiction or manage pain, either Dr. Mings or Dr. Hunter?
Want me to take a run at it, Mary?
Yes, please.
So from my point of view, I do have a lot of patients who tell me that they are very benefited by, and the current buzzword around here seems to be the CBDs. We worry about the exploding use of marijuana. I know in Oregon it's legal, it's soon becoming legal here soon, and there are a number of mental health providers who are concerned about uncovering psychosis and various things. I'm not sure how much to worry about that. I do think that from our medical point of view, the research isn't very robust and isn't very good. There are some preliminary indicators that some of the cannabinoids, commonly referred to as the CBDs, are quite helpful, can be helpful in reducing seizures, can be helpful in reducing anxiety, can be helpful in reducing pain, and possibly even some of the addictive stuff. But the research isn't there to a level where most of us who are kind of skeptical scientific types feel like we can really jump on it. And on top of that, it's hard to operationalize it because we don't really know if one of the local dispensaries says, oh, yes, this is all high in CBDs and this is going to be good for your back. I don't know where the control on that is. I don't know how to recommend that to patients because I'm not sure how I know what they're really getting. With all that said, I do think that the cannabinoids are safer in general by quite a bit than the opioids. I think it's a lot harder to overdose on. And if it finds its way towards helping with chronic pain, helping with anxiety, and helping with addiction issues, then I think it will find its place. And currently, I think it's probably up to individual patients and their dispensers to try to work it out. And I think the people who are in the field and doing the dispensing probably know as much about it as the doctors do.
All right, Dr. Hunter, we'll pick this up on the other side of a short break. This is the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Emily Curitan. We'll be back with Dr. Hunter and Dr. Mings in a minute five. Back on the Jefferson Exchange, I'm Emily Curitan, and this hour we've been talking about opioid addiction and opioid safety, particularly with doctors from Humboldt County who are part of an effort called the RX Safe Humboldt Coalition, developing standards and guidelines for prescribing opioids and also educating people about how to manage their pain more safely. You can join this discussion with the docs and with us here on the Exchange, 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. We reached out to people across the region through the internet and social media this last week, trying to understand what it's like to suffer from either acute or chronic pain. We got a response. Well, to be fair, we did get responses from people who said things like opioids are a godsend. They're a blessing. A registered nurse, John in Anderson, California, says that he administers these medications on a daily basis and sees the relief that they bring to people who otherwise would be in misery. This one from Eric in Redding says, I was prescribed oxycodone for pain before and after two surgeries. I was addicted after the first month and on them for over 2 years. I'm currently in an outpatient Suboxone treatment program, and I could not stop without getting severely sick. At midnight tonight, I will have 60 days clean. So that came from Eric in Redding last Friday. Eric, we hope you have 64 days under your belt now. Doctors, either one of you, if someone like Eric needs surgery or pain management in the future, what are some of the appropriate approaches to help him and be compassionate without jeopardizing his sobriety?
Yeah, we face this a lot. I couldn't tell from his comment there whether when he says 60 days clean, if that's with or without Suboxone. There's kind of a debate in the in the recovery world. Most of us who treat addiction with Suboxone feel that people who are maintained on Suboxone are clean, and that they have be like using insulin for diabetes or something.
Mm-hmm.
So there are still some people who think that you're not clean unless you're off of everything. So I'm not quite sure which way he meant, but either way, it's really important for people who have that issue and know they have that issue, when they're faced with acute pain, to be upfront with their physicians, talk about that, talk about it honestly, and work together to work it out. We do this kind of regularly. So, like, if you're going in for a major, like a knee replacement, for example, I've had several examples of this recently, and someone has a history of addiction or on Suboxone, either way, we think about it ahead of time. We plan how long we're going to use the short-acting opiates. For most surgical experiences, most acute experiences, the usual thing is that somewhere around 2 weeks is enough. And we've had good experience as long as people were open, sharing, going into it eyes wide open with the risks, and realizing that where we have trouble is where people keep their addiction past hidden and then exaggerate their pain to get more medicines, and that makes it more problematic for everybody.
Right. We heard from Kay in Klamath Falls a bit like that. She said, or they began with a prescription and Then ended up taking opioids for 7 years, which meant faking illnesses to get prescriptions from doctors, buying and stealing them from family and friends. Kay adds that they weren't your typical addict. Their words, I graduated college and got an amazing job. The pills helped me feel at ease and have fun and not stress so much. On the other hand, we heard from people who feel like they're constantly being sort of treated like addicts or treated with suspicion for trying to use opioids to deal with pain in a responsible way. Dr. Mings, how do you walk that line with your patients in terms of developing the standards and guidelines for when and when not to prescribe opiates?
Well, a lot of the times the problems come when you see somebody for the first time that's already on a prescription. Either they moved to your area or they're transferring from another provider, and you don't know them yet. And there are tools and conversations. You do need to sort of assess certain for certain markers of appropriateness and dependency. The fact of always sort of craving and worrying about your next dose is a sign that the medication has probably already had a deleterious effect on your body's ability to regulate both pain and moods. There's a big overlap in the neurotransmitters between pain regulation and mood regulation, primarily through dopamine. So when you're on these meds for a long time, you've lost the ability to even keep in yourself in that sort of normal range of mood and comfort. So there are tools. New people are going to have to get used to sort of being asked some questions and realize that their providers are just trying to recognize who is it safe and appropriate to continue opiates and who is getting more harm from them than benefit.
Thanks, Dr. Go ahead, Dr. Hunter.
Can I take a run, Emily? This is a big concern, big problem. When people who have been doing only what their doctors have told them to do for many years go to a new doctor and then feel as though they're being questioned, look, the suspicion. People are always telling me that doctor thinks I'm a drug addict. And it's a very delicate conversation to have. So, and when the pendulum swung, which has swung, away from opiate prescribing, the new young physicians coming out are very, feeling very skeptical about long-term opiate use. And the problem is when someone who believes with all their heart that this is the thing that allows them to get up and go to work and play with their grandkids and do everything, and it's what works, any little idea that might be taken away is terrifying. And in that conversation, it's very difficult and very tricky for the doctor not to be compassionate enough and empathetic enough to develop a bond where patients trust that they have their health in mind. They do feel, people feel regularly that their doctors are being suspicious and treating them like drug seekers. What we've decided to do here in my clinic is that since this is such a regular problem, I have a group that I run once a week with one of my behavioral health people, and we just say to our new providers, look, if you're uncomfortable with a new patient coming in with opioids, and they're stable and they're not, doing meth and they're not selling, they're doing what they're supposed to do, don't change anything right away. We need to build a bond with them first. Have them come to our group, and we'll just discuss in an open forum where we can share ideas back and forth that, there may be a better way. We may be able to help you get to a better way. We're not trying to take anything away. We don't believe you're doing anything bad. But we do think that you can get a better way. And that's just a very hard conversation to have, and it takes a lot of delicacy and a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a hard conversation to have on a first visit, impossible on a first visit, and very hard on a series of 15-minute visits.
If you're just joining us, we are getting a pulse on opioid safety in Humboldt County and what two medical doctors there are doing to try to create a safer and more effective culture for treating pain. We've got Dr. Bill Hunter from the Open Door Community Health Clinic and Dr. Mary Mings, Medical Director of the Humboldt Independent Practice Association. You're welcome to join us. A few minutes left here, 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Let's take a call from Arthur in Grants Pass. Arthur, you're on the air.
Hi. I just want to say that thank you so much for this very important program. I believe that there is another possible way to reduce the pain, both chronic and acute, so that the need for opiates doesn't start in the first place. You've mentioned many of them, yoga and meditation, and those are all important. This one is a low-current, low-frequency electronic stimulation that has been approved by the FDA for 20 years, and it's been used extensively and in many clinical trials by the VA, and it's very effective for certain types of pain, some of the common pains that opiates are prescribed for. One of the devices is called AlphaStim. It's a very low current, microcurrent. It's very low frequency, less than one cycle per second. And it's being used in clinics in Grants Pass and throughout the nation, actually. It has no side effects, which is one of the really nice things. And if it is something that's effective for an individual, then they don't need to have the opiates prescribed.
All right, Arthur, let's get the doctor's take on electronic stimulation.
I personally don't have any experience with it. I have heard reports of that. I've had a couple of patients tell me that it's very beneficial, but I don't have direct experience myself, and I don't have I don't know of how to get that for people.
Dr. Mings?
Yeah, I don't have experience either, but I have heard of it. And in general, if something is safe and has some reports of benefit, I'm supportive of it. Every approach to treatment, number one, it should be individualized and compassionate, but it's always a balancing of expected benefits versus risks.
And with this Humboldt effort here, the RX Safe Coalition, a big part of it seems to be creating these resource guides where maybe where a medical doctor doesn't know about electronic stimulation, they still might be able to connect a patient with someone who does. Last year, you guys were awarded a sizable grant from the California Healthcare Foundation to expand the efforts of this project and collaborate with others across the state. Has this taken form yet? And if yes, what does it look like?
yes, we applied for and received that grant. It was not big financially, but it was really a networking opportunity. That began about 10 or 11 months ago, and it has allowed us connection to resources across the state. There are 12 coalitions throughout California that are either county or groups of counties, and it has sort of shifted our focus. Their focus is on, number one, improving prescribing guidelines, which we are already working on. Number two, increasing medication-assisted treatment, which is primarily, we don't have methadone clinics in Humboldt County, so that's buprenorphine, which Dr. Hunter and his clinic are doing a great job with. And number three is increased distribution of naloxone, which is Narcan, and this is an overdose reversal drug. So our public health partners are doing a great job of training stakeholders throughout the county. They've got a lot of samples. They're distributing. They're teaching individuals and groups at a lot of different places how to recognize signs of overdose and administer Narcan.
Tell them about the library.
Oh, what was that, Dr. Hunter?
Oh, I wanted Mary to tell the story about the librarian.
Oh, let's hear the story about the librarian, Mary.
Yes, yes. At our main branch, Humboldt main branch, the librarians have been very interested and progressive in learning how to safely support the homeless, air quotes, population that sort of hangs out at the library. And they've been coming to coalition meetings, and they got training and had a supply of Narcan, which about a month ago, a librarian thought she needed to wake up a patron because they're welcome to hang out there all day, but they're not supposed to sleep. And she went to wake him up and recognized that he was overdosed. And she got the Narcan. She had to give him a second dose. And by the time 911 got there, he was coming around. So that got a lot of attention, a librarian reverses overdose. And I hope it's inspired other stakeholders like law enforcement and other places where an overdose might happen, where time is of the essence, and a life could be saved. We also had a successful reversal with the Arcata Police Department. They had stepped up and said, yes, we'd like to be trained and supplied. And so they carry Narcan to each individual, and They used it probably a few days after the librarian, and they also saved a life.
We're coming to the end of our hour here, but when I mentioned the grant that you guys got from the California Healthcare Foundation, it was $60,000. Not a huge amount of money relative to the scale of the problem and the costs of care today. If money were no object, Dr. Hunter, what would you do to improve opioid safety in this region?
Money were no object. Well, I guess we'd expand what we're doing. I think we would certainly try to do work as hard as we could on a cultural shift so that people understood that such things as yoga and mindfulness and Tai Chi and movement therapies are real and not imaginary. It doesn't mean things are all in your head. We probably would increase the availability of medication-assisted treatment for addiction and for chronic pain with the buprenorphine program that we're doing. I can't think of any brand new initiatives that we would do. I think we just ramp up the scale.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your ideas with the greater region today. It's been a treat to take a peek into Humboldt County and also hear from people's experiences. Our guests have been Dr. Bill Hunter, Medical Director at Open Door Community Health Clinic in Humboldt County. Dr. Hunter, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And Dr. Mary Mings, Medical Director of Humboldt Independent Practice Association. Dr. Mings, thank you.
Thank you. I really appreciate the chance for the conversation.
It's been our pleasure. And again, both doctors are part of the RX Safe Humboldt Coalition. You can find more about that on our website, jeffexchange.org.